I thought I should this morning to talk a little bit about enthusiastic perseverance or joyous effort in the practice, because that's a really important element of being able to continue our Dharma practice over a long period of time and make it successful. And in the Lama, they speak of three hindrances to joyous effort, three types of laziness, actually. And so since I am expert in these three, I thought to talk from my personal experience about one aspect of Lama I know very well. Okay. So the first type of laziness is the laziness of procrastination. Okay. The second type is the laziness of being too busy, doing unimportant things. And the third is the laziness of discouragement. Okay, so let's go back to the first one, the laziness of procrastination. So this is the one that says, mañana a la mañana. Okay, I'll practice Dharma tomorrow morning. Okay, first thing tomorrow morning. Today I'm too busy, I'm too tired. Tomorrow morning for sure my mind will be fresh and alert, and then I'll practice. And then of course tomorrow morning comes and we are tired, we are exhausted, we're afraid that we're going to completely, get chronic fatigue syndrome. So, we better sleep in a little bit to protect our health, because after all, our teachers are telling us to keep our health good so we can practice Dharma for a long time. So we need at least 10 hours sleep, so that we can keep our body healthy, right? And so we put off our Dharma practice so we can sleep, and then we'll practice in the evening. Right? Because then the day's activities are over, so we'll be able to focus better because it's just the evening. And of course, the evening comes and we are too tired. We're so exhausted. We spent all day playing video games, and it was really very stressful. So, we're tired. We better go to sleep early. And mañana a la mañana, we'll practice, when we're fresh. And so the whole life kind of goes by like this. Always putting it off. Later, 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 later. And so no practice gets done. So the antidote to that, they say, is to contemplate impermanence. And to think that there may not be a mañana a la mañana. Okay? That we don't know when the time of death will come. It's certain. We don't know when it's going to be. And it could come very soon. And so, to always put off our practice with the thought that I have plenty of time and I'll do it later is really kind of foolish, because there may not be a later. And of course, we always feel that, this kind of premature death happens to other people. It does, doesn't it? It always happens to other people. It hasn't happened to us. It's not going to happen to us. It's always other people who have traffic accidents or get, cancer when they're young, or some have some kind of hindrance, but not us. And that's what all the people who have those difficulties thought before they had the difficulties too, was that it's not us who dies young. It's somebody else. And so to really remember that it could be us. And therefore, to really cherish our life and take the chance that we have to practice. Now, one way that we go wrong in this, okay, is we confuse this kind of joyous effort that overcomes the laziness of procrastination, we confuse this with pushing ourselves. Okay? And so instead of joyous effort, what we do is we put ourselves in the pressure cooker and we say, death is indefinite, the time of... death is definite. It took you a while. Are you sleeping? Death is definite. The time of death is indefinite. Uh-oh. I'm nervous. I better practice Dharma right away. Let's get to it. Okay, where's that book? About dying, and I better practice, and I can't sleep, and I'm going to stay up until midnight, and 1, and 2, and 3, and 4, and just be completely virtuous all the time. I'm going to meditate so diligently, and my teacher is going to see that I'm such a wonderful, great disciple because I practice so earnestly and so hard. Okay? And we do that. I mean, we are Western high achievers, aren't we? So this is what we push ourselves to do. And we think that this is joyous effort. It's not joyous effort. This is pushing ourselves, and it's the best way to get stressed out and to get low that you can possibly think of. Okay? So this is the way in which we actually create a hindrance for ourselves in Dharma practice, because we aren't very kind to ourselves, you know, and we have this tense energy that pushes us ourselves. And we can't practice Dharma with this kind of tension, because Dharma has to be something that's joyful. I mean, it's called joyous effort, isn't it? It's not called tense pushing yourself. So, you know, it's like, okay, so we have to have a mind that comes with joy. And then we think, well, how am I supposed to be joyful if I'm going to die? You know, isn't that meditation on death supposed to make me neurotic and nervous and panicky? And the answer is no. You know, Buddha didn't teach us to contemplate death so we can get neurotic and panicky. We can do that all by ourselves. Buddha didn't need to teach us how to do that. Okay? So if we're meditating on death and getting panicky, we're not doing the meditation correctly. Okay, what we should be coming out with at the end of that meditation is a very calm, stable mind that's extremely clear and is able to set our priorities very clearly, so we know what's important in life and what's not important in life. So it's not panicked, it's not neurotic, it's not fearful and stressed out. It's just extremely clear, you know, so that we know what's important, and Dharma practice is important. And it's not that we have to practice Dharma, but we want to practice Dharma. Okay? So when we do the meditation on death properly, we come out with a feeling of, I really want to practice. And that feeling of wanting is what makes the practice joyful. Okay? When we push ourselves, we don't really want to do it, do we? We're just doing it because we think we should. But if we meditate properly, then we really want to, and it becomes easy. Okay, so this is where we want to get ourselves to. Yeah. And I'm trying to point out here some of the ways that we as Westerners go astray, because, again, I'm very expert in this, and I thought some of you may have some of the same problems in your practice. Then the second kind of laziness is being too busy doing unimportant things. Yeah. So as one of my teachers, Geshe Noam Dargye, he had the expression, being the busiest of the busy. Yeah. And this is American life these days, isn't it? Yeah. You have to have your calendar, and every single minute has to be filled up. And if an appointment cancels and you have a half an hour or an hour free, you don't know what to do. You know, you feel completely lost, so you immediately fill it up with some other activity. And if we're not always doing something, if we don't always feel stressed out like there's not enough time, then we don't feel like we have a life. You know? It's like, people, unless you're busy, you have a, you know, if you go into work and people say, well, what are you going to do on the weekend? And if you say, I'm going to, you know, sit on my meditation cushion and meditate, or I'm going to read, or I'm going to talk to my family. Imagine that, having time to talk to the people you live with. Then your coworkers go, what are you doing? You know, why don't you get a life? Yeah, you should be doing something. Get a life here. You know, you should have hobbies. You should be exploring new things. You should be working overtime. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't just work 8 hours a day, at least, 18, maybe, or if a slack day, 10, 12, But American life has become like this, where we just keep ourselves so busy all the time, and where we feel very ungrounded unless we're busy. Yeah? And so we're always saying, oh, society makes me so busy. I have to do this, I have to do that. But it's not really society who's doing that. Yeah, it's us. It's us. We as individuals make ourselves so busy. We're always saying, I have to do this, I have to do that. You know, that's our favorite expression, isn't it? Sorry, I can't do Dharma practice because I have to go here. Sorry, I can't, go to the teachings because I have to do this other thing that's really important. Actually, the only thing that we have to do in life is to die. That's the only thing we have to do. That's the only certain thing. The only thing we ever have to do is die. Everything else is optional. And think about it, it's true, isn't it? Everything else except death is optional in our life. So we have 24 hours every day. Nobody else is making us do things. And I think here's where we really have to be honest in our Dharma practice. And instead of saying, I have to, say, I am choosing to. And that feels a little bit uncomfortable, because when we say, I have to, then it's somebody else's fault. I don't have responsibility. Yeah, I don't have time to practice or attend teachings because it's somebody else who's making me so busy. Nobody else is making us busy. We're making ourselves busy. We are choosing to do the things that we're doing. And it's very uncomfortable sometimes to own that and say, I am choosing to watch television for 3 hours tonight. Yeah. I am choosing to go to the shopping mall because I feel hollow inside and I think buying something is going to fill that empty space. I am choosing to stay on the internet and look up all these ridiculous things because I'm seeking distraction. You know, and to be really honest with ourselves, I'm choosing to do this. It's uncomfortable, but I think this is the way that we're finally going to get through to ourselves and to feel that we have some control and some power in our lives. So instead of always feeling like we're victims of society, to take responsibility. You know, I am choosing to work 40 hours a week, or I am choosing to work 60 hours a week. Now our mind says, but I have to, because otherwise I can't pay the rent, I can't pay the mortgage. But then I am choosing to live this lifestyle where I have so much rent to pay or I have so much on a mortgage. Nobody else is making me live it. I am choosing to do that. Therefore, because I choose this lifestyle, I'm choosing to have to go to work to pay for it. You know? And then when you have to go shopping to get the kind of clothes that fit in with the lifestyle, you know, because you can't go to work in, you know, kind of your blue jeans if you're working in an office, then you have to buy nice clothes. So instead of thinking, I have to buy nice clothes and I have to buy a certain kind of car because I'm working with a certain group of people, and if I show up in my jeans and my jalopy, you know, it's going to be unacceptable for the company. So I have to get these kind of clothes. I have to go out drinking with my coworkers afterwards so I can fit in with them. I have to get a car like this. Instead of doing I have to recognize I am choosing to do this because I am choosing to try and fit in with a certain group of people. Nobody else is making me. I'm choosing this. Okay? And it's uncomfortable because then we have to stop and ask ourselves, why am I choosing this? Is this really what I want? You know, what do I really want in life? What's really important? Am I living the kind of life that I really want to? And I think these kinds of questions are the essence of Dharma practice, you know, because Dharma practice is bringing us to be present in our life and to be aware and to make conscious decisions. Regular life is living on automatic, you know, just doing what we think we're supposed to do, doing what we think other people think we should be doing. You got it? You know, I mean, how much of our lives do we do things because we think that other people think we should be doing that? And how many things do we do because we really think those are valuable activities to do? Okay. And so to really start, you know, coming back and like, what am I doing and why am I doing it? Because that's the whole thing about motivation. And it's that motivation that creates the karma. And it's that karma that comes with us to the future lives. And it's our karma that's going to facilitate our gaining realizations or impede it. Okay? So these kinds of questions, I think, are really, really essential for practice. You know, we can memorize lots of texts and study all kinds of complicated philosophy. But if we're doing it just on automatic because we think that's what I'm supposed to be doing, you know, then still the motivation isn't completely present. We're not really choosing it. Okay? So a lot of the busyness in our life is done because of this mind that thinks I should be doing all these things because other people expect me to be doing it or other people want me to be doing it. My parents aren't going to be happy if I don't do this, and my boss isn't going to be happy if I don't do it, or my Dharma friends are going to think I'm weird if I don't do this, or my ordinary friends are going to think thus and such about me. And so we just go through our life saying, I have to do this and that. And feeling like our life is out of control. And it's really our mind that's out of control. Okay? And so to say, no, I'm choosing to do this. So what really do I want to do and what am I going to choose to do? You know? And spending a lot of time really reflecting on that. You know, at the time we die, what do we want to have to take with us? Because whatever we're doing now is what we're going to take with us at the time of death. And have you ever heard of somebody dying with the regret that they didn't work enough overtime? You know, somebody's lying on their deathbed saying, I wasted my life. I should have worked more overtime. Yeah, I don't think anybody dies that way. Why do we feel while we're alive that we have to work and live such a, you know, a heavy schedule and fill our lives with all these things? You know? And so to really think about it, you know, because what we're doing now is what we take with us into the future life. Yeah? Our kind heart that we're spending time cultivating now is what we take with us. If we're too busy to cultivate a kind heart because we're so busy getting aggravated and anxious and complaining and irritated and self-righteous, we're so busy generating that kind of angry, frustrated mind that we don't have time to meditate on loving kindness, then it's that angry, frustrated mind and all the karma it creates that we're taking with us into our future lives. And so to stop and, you know, wait, I don't need to spend my time getting so upset about this. You know, I don't want to take this energy into future lives. It's more important that right now I sit and, you know, work out why I'm so angry and aggravated and get my mind to a point where I can let that go and develop some understanding and some kindness in the situation. Because that's the kind of mind I want to have now, and that's the kind of mind I want to take with me when I die. And I don't know when I'm going to die. Yeah. So I can't say I'm too busy to work out all my anger and frustration. You know, I'm too busy memorizing this text, you know, to sit down and contemplate why I'm so angry at my fellow Dharma students. You know? I mean, come on. We got to get real in life. You know, what we're taking with us is that state of mind and you know, really applying the Dharma that our teachers have taught us and soothing our own mind. Okay, so it's good to think, spend some time thinking about what is it that we distract ourselves with. Yeah, what is it that we tell ourselves I have to do that we fill our lives up with? And it can be interesting to make a little list of those things. You know, we all have our own little addictions that we have. Now, you know, we all think, oh, well, some people, you know, they have substance abuse problems. You know, that's not very good. Yeah. We don't have substance abuse problems, do we? You know, we have our own interpretation of the fifth precept. It means just not getting totally intoxicated, but you can have a little bit, you know, and it's okay. I'm still keeping my fifth precept all right. Yeah. A lot of people think like this. I was really surprised. I was leading a retreat several months ago, and somebody asked a question about the fifth precept, and we began to talk about it as a group. I was really surprised how many old Dharma students either hadn't taken the fifth precept or had taken it and broken it. Yeah? And it was kind of like true confession time. You know, I mean, just the group themselves started to doing this, people saying, you know, about how they had broken the precept. Some of you may not even know what the fifth precept is. big problem. Yeah, but, you know, why do we get ourselves intoxicated? Yeah, I have to, you see this? I have to take a drink to relax. And anyway, the AMA says that a little bit of wine is good for your health, right? And so I'm trying to keep my body healthy so I can practice, so I need a little bit of alcohol. And I have to go out drinking or smoking with my friends because that's how we close business deals. You know, I can't tell you how many people tell me this. You know, if I don't go out, you know, partying with the people I do business with, I won't be able to close the deal. And all my colleagues will think I'm a bit strange. So you see, I have to go out and drink or, you know, smoke a joint or whatever. Right? You have to do it. So, you know, so some people have that kind of problem. You know, that's how we keep ourselves, the second kind of laziness, keep ourselves very busy. Okay. Then other people are a little bit snooty and that. Oh, I don't have a problem with the substance abuse thing because I've taken the fifth precept. You know, but they're internetaholics. Okay? You know, go online, you know, get the DSL, do your internet, do this, check out that site, check out this site, play with this, play with that, get the new software, download this, download that. Yeah? Internetaholics. Yeah. There's computer gameaholics. Yeah. Spend all so much time playing computer games. Oh, so good, you know. There's shopaholics. You know, have to go shopping. No, not just once a week to get groceries, but a little shopping every day, you know, because you forgot something yesterday, and then you get a little bit more than you actually need. There's driveaholics. Because we love to drive. We jump in our car. We don't know where we're going, but we go somewhere. You know, that's how we soothe our mind. We're TV-oholics. Yeah? Come home from work or come home from a hard day at Dharma class. Yeah? You know, studying all this complicated thing. You don't know if it's the Lankavatara Sutra or the Dasabhumi Sutra. I can't stand this anymore. You know, I need to relax my mind. So let's watch the 6 o'clock news. You know. Or what do people watch? I'm so out of it, I don't even know. You know. What program do people watch? Come on. Come on. Some of you. Oh, you're pretending you don't know. But we sit down, you know, and we just, I've watched the television. And we call this relaxation. Yeah? Watching some people kill each other and other people fight. And we say that it's very relaxing. Yeah? So, you know, we keep ourselves so busy doing all sorts of stuff, you know, or so busy running from one hobby to the next hobby. Yeah? I mean, you have to learn bowling, and then you have to learn bonsais, and then you have to learn square dancing, and then square dancing is coming back in fashion, somebody told me. Yeah? I think I heard bowling is too. Gee, I might finally be able to do something now. Walkaholic. That's good for your health. That's good. Buddha taught walking meditation. Yeah? Just because you see me out every day walking, it doesn't mean I'm distracted. Come on! Just because my mind's totally distracted, I'm actually trying to practice walking meditation and be mindful and say some mantra. Right? And I have to do it. I really have to, you know. So, okay. But we all have our own thing that we are aholics about, you know. And we keep ourselves, again, the busiest of the busy, doing things that aren't really important. You know, and then just how much... What I find it in American culture, how much we love noise. You know, you get in the car, and what's the first thing you do after you turn on the ignition? Turn on the radio. Turn on the tape player. Isn't it? You know, you come home. What do? Turn on the TV. Some people can't stand to be in a house that's quiet. They have to have some noise. You know, background noise. And meanwhile, what that background noise is, you know, 45 people killed in a train explosion, you know, that's what you're using to soothe yourself is, you know, background noise. It puts imprints in our mind stream. Yeah. But to look at how much we feed ourselves with noise, you know, be it music or just the media in general, how much we distract ourselves by reading catalogs and, you know, reading magazines and, you know, got to read People magazine. Let's see what, you know, so-and-so and so-and-so, what the state of their marriage is. Meanwhile, the state of your own marriage you're ignoring, but you want to read the magazine about somebody else's gossip marriage. Okay? So we keep ourselves very busy distracting ourselves with this kind of stuff. So that's the second kind of laziness. And really seeing how harmful that is to our Dharma practice to fill our mind with a lot of this irrelevant information, and especially because so much of it is involved with stimulating attachment and anger. Yeah, so of course it makes practice difficult afterwards. Okay, then the third kind of laziness is the laziness of discouragement, the laziness of putting ourselves down. Okay, we Westerners tend to be very expert at that. You know, we're very good at putting ourselves down. So this is the poor me mentality. Okay, pauvre de mi, pauvre de mi. You know, poor me, poor me. And we spend hours in poor me. You know, I don't know, maybe I should just talk about myself. You know, maybe some of you don't do this. But, you know, you can spend hours, you know, poor me. I don't know Tibetan very well. Poor me, I can't concentrate very well. Poor me, I'm so forgetful. You know, poor me, everybody else has better opportunities than I do. Poor me, all the people who I like don't like me. Poor me, I trust these people and then they betray my trust and they treat me rottenly. And poor me, these people talk behind my back. They say all sorts of untrue things. Can you imagine? you know, my friend saying all these horrible, untrue things about me behind my back. Poor me. And poor me, my little toe hurts, you know, and my little finger hurts, and my stomach hurts, and my jaw hurts, you know, and everything hurts, and poor me, I'm so tired, poor me, and, you know, and we just kind of go on and on. Do any of you have poor me? Yeah, I mean, this is our favorite meditation topic. We can meditate on poor me single-pointedly, no distraction whatsoever. You know, you generate yourself as, you know, you do the self-generation practice, right? You arise as Chenrezig, and then the next minute, it's poor me, you know? Poor me, I have 1,000 arms. What am I going to do with all of them? Yeah? Poor me, everybody thinks I'm weird because I have 11 heads. And then from there we go into, you know, just our regular poor me thing, don't we? You know? And we pick up our mala, and, you know, we could do 108 Omani Peme Hongs, but we get distracted, don't we? And we do 108 poor me's. You know? Totally, you know. Have you ever had it? You start saying one mantra and then you realize you started saying another mantra in the middle? You know, you're going, Omani Peme Om, Omani Peme Om, and then pretty soon it's Omtari Tatari Tirsa. And then it's, what sadhana was I in the middle of doing anyway? You ever had that happen? Yeah? And then, you know, besides that one, we start out with Omani Peme Hong, and then we really get into poor me, poor me, poor me. You know, nobody likes me, and everybody treats me rotten, and I have all these good qualities that nobody appreciates. And I do all these things for people, and they don't appreciate me at all. And nobody loves me. Or a few people, they love me, but they don't love me enough. I mean, I'm so lovable. The world should love me more. Why doesn't my family love me more? Why don't people appreciate me more? I mean, I do so much work. I mean, that's why my back hurts so much. I'm working so hard for everybody. And they don't appreciate how hard I work. And, you know, that's why I'm sleeping 10 hours a day. Because I'm working so hard for the benefit of sentient beings. And they don't appreciate, they don't even say thank you. And they don't, you know, the least they could do is say, you're so wonderful. You know? And then I meditate so hard, and my teachers don't even acknowledge what a good student I am. I mean, I sit there, you know, completely in my single point of concentration. Trying so hard to meditate. And, you know, everybody else in the room is distracted. I've checked on them. They all have their eyes. You know, I'm the only one. And my teachers don't appreciate what a good student I am and how hard I'm trying, you know? And you know, I mean, they should at least realize that I really am their best disciple and their most devoted disciple. I mean, I'm the one with the most guru devotion of all. I love my teachers. They're so devoted. Nobody else is as devoted to my teachers as I am. I'm sure they're reincarnations of the... I'm sure they're emanations of the Buddha. But gee whiz, I sure wish they'd do something differently. But they're really Buddhas. If they're Buddhas, why aren't they praising me? I really need a pat on the back right now. They have omniscience. Don't they see that I need a pat on the back? You know? And so, you know, we just get into this poor me thing so much, you know, that nobody appreciates us enough. Yeah? And we're so unqualified and we're so just hopeless. Yeah? And you know, this is what we believe about ourselves. And so no wonder we can't practice. You know, because We're too busy telling ourselves that we're awful and we're unqualified. Yeah? And I think that this is one of our biggest problems as Westerners, is that we tell ourselves all this kind of stuff, you know? And we're laughing, but this is really what our mind is thinking, isn't it? Or am I being too disclosive of what my mind is thinking? And I'm the only one. Oh, I knew it all along. I'm the only one. See, I knew I was totally unqualified. Awful. I'm the only one who has such an awful mind like this. Okay, I thought you did and I was sharing it. You know, and so we're so busy just, you know, putting ourselves down all the time that you know, we don't practice. Yeah? We don't practice. And, you know, one of the things I think I've come to realize is one of the most difficult things is to have self-acceptance. You know? And that self-acceptance is really a basis for Dharma practice. That if we can't accept ourselves and have some kind of kindness towards ourselves and patience towards ourselves, that it's going to be very, very difficult to practice because we're so busy saying, poor me, poor me. Yeah. And I realize, you know how you know, when we do the Shakyamuni Buddha meditation or even Chenrezig, whatever practice you're doing, one of the first things they say is like that, you know, there's Chenrezig, you know, with his long, narrow, beautiful eyes, looking at you with compassion. And I realized some time ago that I always skipped over that part of the meditation. I said it, but I never really did it. And I realized it was because it was extremely difficult for me to imagine somebody, especially a Buddha, looking at me with acceptance. Why? Because I didn't accept myself. You know? So how could Chenrezig accept me if I don't accept myself? Chenrezig's, you know, compassionate eyes go out for all infinite sentient beings except me. And I when I saw that, I realized, wait a minute, I have to really stop and in my practice do this. And it was really uncomfortable at the beginning to focus on Chenrezig looking at me with compassion. You know, because the mind is so used to, oh, if somebody looks at me with kindness, well, then I'm embarrassed because I don't really deserve it. Because if they really knew what I was like, they wouldn't look at me this way. Yeah. And then to realize, no, hey, Chenrezig actually does know all that stuff about us and still can look at us with compassion. And so if Chenrezig can look at us with compassion, how about if we can start looking at ourselves with some of that same kind of tenderness and gentleness and lack of judgment and compassion? Yeah? And I think that if we practice doing this and just having some acceptance of ourselves, it completely transforms our whole way of relating to the Dharma and our whole way of relating to other sentient beings. You know? Because it's hard to accept anybody else if we can't accept ourselves. Yeah. But then, when we try and accept ourselves, sometimes we get really tangled up. And we think that accepting ourselves, if I accept myself, then I'm just going to get complacent and I'm not going to try and change. Okay? So we get confused and we think, no, I can't accept myself because then I won't try and change. But you see, that's getting back into the pushing mentality, isn't it? That the only way I'm going to change is if I don't accept myself, I'm disgruntled with myself, and I push myself to be better because I can't stand myself. Okay, so that's going back into that pushing thing, which is, that's not a Dharma attitude. Okay, but realizing that accepting ourselves means that we're accepting what we are now, and we can still try and improve in the future. So self-acceptance doesn't mean we're going to get smug and we're going to get complacent. It simply means that what I am now is what I am now, and that's okay, that's good enough. And then, as you know, if we can get to that point of, you know, what I am is good enough, then actually that's when we can start doing the meditation on precious human life properly, and we begin to see actually what I have is not just good enough, it's really exceptional. You know, I have incredible opportunities that nobody could ever believe in. You know how sometimes people get so excited about their dreams? I feel that my life is better than anything I could ever dream. You know, I don't have fantastic dreams of stuff. But for me, being able to sit in this class with Geshe-la, that's better than anything I could ever dream in my whole life. Yeah? And it's like, we must have done something really, really good in a previous life to have the karma to be able to come to this course. You know, so it's not just, you know, accepting ourselves, but it's saying, wow, you know, what fortune I have, and whoever I was in the past life, thank you, you know. That person did something really good because I have so much incredible fortune right now. You know, and really appreciating that. And then, you know, so that... You know, to be able to have that kind of meditation on precious human life comes from accepting ourselves and, you know, and then being able to see the good fortune that we have. And just even having, you know, a little bit of faith or a little bit of awareness that the Dharma is important in our life. I mean, let's value and treasure that spiritual aspect of ourselves, you know, instead of taking it for granted. But let's really appreciate that we have some Dharma appreciation. We have some Dharma aspiration. So many of the people on this planet, you know, don't even know about the Dharma. If they know about the Dharma, they say, oh, what kind of weird stuff is that? So just the fact that we have, you know, even this much of confidence in the Dharma, what an incredible blessing in our life to be able to build on and do something valuable with. Okay. So I think, you know, being able to appreciate how far we've come so far, instead of comparing ourselves either to other people or to our own imagined ideal of what a spectacular Dharma practitioner should be. Because we often do that. You know, this whole thing of comparison, I think, is one of the reasons why we come out with so little self-acceptance, because we're so busy comparing ourselves to everybody else. You know, oh, look, that one knows Tibet and they're fluent. Oh, I don't. Oh, that one asks such intelligent questions. I don't even understand enough to ask a question. You know? And then, you know, in regular life too, oh, somebody's older than me, they're so much wiser. Somebody's younger than me, they have so much more opportunity. You know, oh, that person's, you know, they're thinner than me, I wish I were thin like them. Oh, that person weighs more than me, I wish I, you know, my body would fill out. Always, you know, discontent with our body, discontent with our knowledge. Always comparing ourselves to other people. You know, oh, that person has blonde hair, I wish I had blonde hair. Oh, that person has dark hair, I wish I had dark hair. You know, whatever we don't have is what we want. Yeah? And so just always comparing ourselves to other people and feeling like we're inferior. And that's so stupid. You know, it's so dumb. And yet we spend an incredible amount of time doing it. And I think that's one of the things that we have to notice we're doing and just press the stop button on that. It's like there's no sense comparing ourselves to others. And, I mean, we in the Dharma world we do too. I mean, I remember years ago just looking and like, oh, some other disciples, they're so much better disciples than me. They have so much faith. I'm the one who has so much doubt. I'm the one who's always asking questions, you know. Now, I'm the one who's so rebellious and I ask all the questions you're not supposed to ask. Yeah? And all these other disciples, they're so full of faith and they're so devoted and they're so earnest and I wish I were like that. And, you know, to realize this kind of comparison is just ridiculous. Totally ridiculous. Because we have no clue what's going on in somebody else's mind. Yeah? And anyway, even if they have more whatever than we do, good, great. You know, rejoice. And let's create the cause for ourselves to have that. But who knows? They may not have what we think they have. Yeah? And in any case, I mean, what use is it to compare ourselves and put ourselves down? I think it's much better, you know? It's like, okay, I came into the Dharma as a complete idiot, you know? I didn't know anything. I mean, look at what we were all doing before we met the Dharma. Think about it. Yeah. And think about what your life might be like now if you hadn't had met the Dharma. What would you be doing right now? Yeah? When I think about this, then I realize, hey, wow, you know, there is something good going on inside. You know, there is some basis, there was some good karma created to be able to meet the Dharma. There is the basis of Dharma qualities, because at least, you know, there's some kind of faith and confidence. There's some effort to practice. There's been some change in my mind since I began. You know? And especially when you think of what you could have been doing now if you hadn't met the Dharma, and thought of the kind of negative karma you could have created from then until now. Yeah? And it's like, wow, you know, my life has really turned out very good compared to what it could have turned out as. Now, I'm very fortunate, and there's some good qualities that are slowly building inside of me. And I respect myself for that, and I rejoice in that. And I appreciate that in myself, and I appreciate that in my Dharma friends, too. Because I think it's very important that we value that spiritual aspect of each other and reinforce it and cherish that in each other, because it is very special, and we're trying to do something special, and we need to encourage each other and support each other in doing it. Yeah. And so to spend some time generating that kind of mind, and then it, you know, that laziness of discouragement goes away. Because we do feel worthwhile. And there's nobody else who can make us feel worthwhile. You know, we're always thinking, if I got a little bit of praise from somebody else, or a little bit of acknowledgement from somebody else, I'd feel worthwhile. But actually, that isn't what does it. You know, we have to feel worthwhile in ourselves. And, you know, somebody else's praise may help sometimes, but sometimes we even reject their praise. You know? And to be able to see the goodness in ourselves and trust that, not get arrogant about it, you know, but trust that and use it in our practice to progress along the path. Okay. So that's a little bit about the three kinds of laziness. Anybody have the chocolate cake and the television ready yet? We're going to do it after class.